Hi, it's Dr. Lisa, and it's time for Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit. And I'm Dr. Lisa, and I give a shit. I fucking give a shit about you, you people out there. And it's a gray day, and I had like a big fucking disaster this week, you know, that I don't even want to talk about. But I just want you to know that, like, it's a life-altering, I should talk about it, but I'm not going to right now. I'm not ready to. But I had a life-altering disaster a couple of weeks ago, and I'm sort of dealing with it right now. And I realized that the last couple of weeks, this is, you know, I was kind of down. And today I feel a little bit better because I have been working through the dilemmas that this particular life-altering thing have had on my day-to-day, you know. But the thing is that, so there's growth. And also, here's the thing. You have to be flexible. I listened to Alan Watts, and it really helped me because the only thing you can count on is change. So if you're good with the change, and my guest, who you're going to meet in a minute, is nodding her head. Like, if you, the more you can embrace the change, the more stable your life is going to be. That's what I learned. That's what I learned from this fucked up thing. And I also think that the only thing that's really fucked up, which this is nothing to do with, if something really goes wrong with your health or the health of people close to you, you know, that where, you know, well, the health, we all wish everyone in our lives good health, even Donald Trump. But the thing is, I'm a very generous person, but the thing is that, you know, it does make me grateful, and you should be grateful too. And, Get out of your rut. Get out of your rut and embrace change. Okay. This is really appropriate because I have somebody on my show today, my guest patient, Laura B. Reagan?
Regan.
Yeah. Say hi, Laura.
Hi.
And Laura is the owner and what does it say here? It says owner and I was trying to think of operator is
right.
The word I'm
operator.
Looking for. Owner and operator of the Footlight, which is personally one of my favorite places, one of the places that made me wish I didn't live near the Morgan stop and I actually lived in a cooler part of Bushwick, which I don't, because then I would go there a lot more. But I do want you to know, Laura, that I made a big point of going there New Year's Eve. I don't know. Well, you know, you do?
I do. I was very sick. I don't know if you knew that. I had the flu.
I did not know that.
I didn't either until like halfway through that shift.
Really?
Oh God. My fever was awful and I didn't know.
Oh.
And until like the end, I was like, I think this is the flu. Cause like as soon as everybody left, I like went to the bathroom, like threw up.
Oh no.
Yeah, my fever was like 103 or something.
Oh no.
Yeah, and I was and like there was no one else that could work that shift that night.
Oh
so
my God.
I just had
really?
To like power through it.
Wow.
I've never been that sick.
So you got what it takes. You know what else? My biggest phobia is throwing up. So I just want you to know I'm really, really grateful that I did not get that.
Right. I know. That was the worst part, is that like I didn't realize how sick I was. I tried to get it covered because I didn't feel great and nobody could do it. And I got to work and I started working through it. And I was like, I just don't feel right.
Do you have phobia about throwing up or are you okay with it?
No, I'm pretty used to throwing up at this point. I drink a lot.
Drink? So you're okay with it. You're okay. Look at her laughing. See, she's so much more chill than I am. This is so true. I'm really tightly wound right now, which is why my point, part of what I want to get to today is that Laura and the Footlight is celebrating their 1 year anniversary of being in business, a whole year, and the party, which I'm planning on attending, and you should too, you folks. Come on. Come on, you deadbeats, get out of those basements. I picture my listeners like in a basement, like watching TV or something, you know, like I don't know who they are.
Watching
I don't know who
Netflix.
They are. Yeah, who knows what. But anyway, so you guys should get out of your basement and come to this party at the Footlight. There's going to be a link on my Facebook page. But before we get any further, I want to remind people that they are listening to Radio Free Brooklyn, which is the best radio station in the Western Hemisphere. So we're a little modest about it, but it's true. And we are really expanding. I mean, we had a group meeting last weekend, and it's crazy how our numbers are up. But we can't keep offering, like, we're going to be doing things like educational programs. We launched RFB2, which is local bands. Did you know about that, Laura?
I think I heard about that, yeah.
Yeah, we have a service now, a streaming service.
That's so cool.
That's just, it's like the local band, it's Brooklyn Bands. It's like the Spotify Brooklyn Bands.
Right. So, I think Sunnyvale just started another venue pretty close
by.
Yeah,
where they
Sunnyvale also have started like Spotify playlists for bands that are
Spotify
upcoming in their
playlist.
Week. Yeah, which I think is a great idea. I think Footlight might start doing it too, but I just want to give credit where credit's due. It's a really good idea.
Yeah, yeah,
good job,
yeah.
Sunnyvale.
Yeah. So anyway, you should go to Brooklyn, RadioFreeBrooklyn.com and donate, go to the donate page and just put in a couple of bucks. Free press is really important these days, and we need your support emotionally and, you know, tangibly. Mm-hmm. Okay, there, we did that. Mm-hmm. So what I thought Laura and I could talk about today, just so you guys know also, like Laura and I have definitely like been in the same room many, many, many times, and I know much more about Laura and who started her thing at Bowery Poetry Club, which I was a big fan of, and just we were all so excited when she brought her stuff, her vibe to the Footlight a year ago. And I kind of know more about her than I do know have spent time with her. Right, Laura? Would you say this is sort of maybe...
Yeah, I feel like we've crossed paths many times, but never had really
this is
the opportunity to have good conversation.
This is it. This is our moment.
Other than when you used to visit me when I worked at Life Cafe.
Oh, yeah. Life
Cafe. You and your husband used to come into Life Cafe and sit at the bar.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
and
yeah.
I think that's the most we ever really got to talk.
Maybe.
And then I used to run into you sometimes at like Pine Box and stuff.
Pine Box.
Too,
We've
crossed paths many times.
Many times. Yeah. Many, many times. So we're going to be getting to all know each other a little bit better together. But so I wanted to focus on what we're going to do a little intake, find out like why somebody would have it in their wherewithal to actually do something like have a music venue and all that stuff. And then mostly we want to find out what the fuck is it like to have the journey that Laura's been on this past year of opening a new music venue, which has, by the way, won the Best of Bushwick just recently. Voting. What do they call the poll?
Bushwick Daily Poll. Yeah.
For best live music venue.
Yeah.
Voted by the people that read the Bushwick. Reader poll. That's the word.
It's a reader poll.
It's a reader poll.
Because we're not technically in Bushwick, although we are like two blocks away from Bushwick.
Well, everybody thinks of Ridgewood.
Yeah, it's Ridgewood.
Ridgewood's more Bushwick than Queens, don't you think?
I would disagree. I lived in Ridgewood for 4 years, and I used to live in Bushwick, and I lived in Bushwick for 3 years. So I don't know. I think Ridgewood has a very different vibe. It's way more neighborhoody. I would even say it was more diverse, and it's I don't know, it's more like, it's I joke that it's where everyone goes to move when they've grown up a little bit and tired. It's like retirement. Ridgewood is like Bushwick retirement.
Oh, so they should have a hipster senior center. That's going to be my next. That should be your next. We're going to do that together now. I can see that. Music and seniors. Senior center for musicians.
Well, like I feel like the next phase of my life, I'm probably going to end up leaving the city at some point. And I want to like go to someplace rural and open up like a retreat space for artists.
Oh.
I know a lot, which is kind of going to be like a retirement home for artists.
Sign me up.
I mean, it's kind of been this, the Footlights always, like something like the Footlight has always been something I wanted to do since I was 14. And was starting to play in bands and had no place to play as a kid. And I thought like, we need to have more all ages venues. So like I had this idea that like someday I would open a venue and Footlight does do all ages shows sometimes on the weekends if someone wants to. So like we're pretty open to it, and we're actually legally allowed to do it because we have the two separate rooms. So we just have all the kids go through the back door and then have security and like take care of that.
Maybe I can do psychotherapy on audience volunteers 8 to 10.
Oh man, that would be
actually that's kind of fun, huh?
Kids say the darndest things, you know.
Yeah, that might be kind of funny.
Yeah.
Hey, all right. So you and I are already generating ideas, but let's get back to you. So let's do a little bit of intake. So where did you grow up?
I grew up in Boston, Massachusetts. Actually, Boston, too.
In an urban area?
Boston's pretty spread out. I grew up in West Roxbury, which is what they call the hidden suburb of Boston.
So it's like a suburban type. And yeah. What kind of parents did... Also, I want to point out that your father actually is so proud of you. Is your father there?
My parents are still...
Is your father listening? Joseph!
He probably...
Mr. Regan, whatever your name is. Good job. And also, she's getting married. Laura's getting married in 2 months.
Yes.
Wow.
I know.
So, congratulations, Joseph. Joseph Regan. Yeah. He was in the Army or something.
No, he wasn't.
Well, what's on his Facebook page?
Oh, he does like the ancient and honoraries, you know, like the... They like dress up and like do parades and stuff. And,
well, that's weird.
Yeah, he's really into it. I'm proud
of
him.
Is that like what do they call that? That, you know, medieval thing?
It's like veteran adjacent.
Oh, is he a veteran?
No.
That's what I'm saying. It's freaking weird. But you know what?
He's
good
very
for
patriotic.
You. I like that. Yeah. I like that. Is he Republican?
No.
Okay. All right. No. Cool.
My parents are pretty progressive. Mm-hmm. Awesome people.
So what did they do?
My dad was a restaurateur most of my life. He owned his own donut shop. And I worked for him for 4 years at his donut shop in Needham, Massachusetts.
Like 4 to 8 or child labor?
I did have my working
like in
papers.
High school?
Yeah. I started working there when I was 14. Mm-hmm. And then I stopped working when I went to college when I was 18.
And how about your mom? What did she do?
My mom works, now she works for the court. She works with the clerk of court, and she's been working for the city for, I don't know, like
what does she
many
do?
Years. I mean, it's basically like when you work with the clerk, it's like an administrative sort of position.
Administrative job.
Yeah, but she gets to sit in the courtroom a lot and like take notes and things like that.
And you have brothers or sisters?
I have one little brother.
Yeah.
He's a corrections officer.
Holy fucking shit, really?
He's the polar opposite of me.
Is he fucking tough?
Yeah, he is.
Is he buff?
He's pretty, like, he's very tall and has very broad shoulders, and he lifts a lot of weights, but he's not super buff.
Is he scary? Could he
buff.
Kick your ass?
Yes.
Could he kick my ass?
He could kick pretty much anyone's ass.
So how did he get so tough?
I don't know, being my little brother.
Well, just...
I was pretty tough when I was a kid. I was a tomboy, and I beat people up all the time, and that was the example that he had to follow.
So you obviously are really, you're close to both your parents?
Yeah.
And so what was your childhood like?
My childhood was pretty amazing. I have to say, I'm very lucky. We lived on a dead-end street, so when there was a bunch of other kids on it, and we just, like, played outside all the time.
Oh,
and
man.
I had, like, the 50s childhood.
So jealous.
We would, like, stay out till the streetlights came on, play flashlight tag. Yeah, it was, like, pretty much picture perfect.
No wonder you seem so happy.
Yeah, we had a pool, you know.
Wow.
I know. Well, my dad did really well at with his donut shop for quite some time, and you know, we were able to buy this really great house and a pool.
Nice.
You know, then you know, things didn't go as well for a long time.
So, but when you were growing up,
but
through
we were
high
kids,
school was pretty stable through high school? Or what happened? When did the down, how was the downturn? What happened
Well, honestly, like my parents sheltered us a lot from the struggles that they're going, that they were going through, which I appreciate.
Good job, Joseph.
I appreciate that they sheltered us, but you know, now that I'm an adult, you know, and going through my own struggles and my own financial struggles and trying to like, you know, be a business owner, and I've learned so much from my parents, and now they're being really open about a lot of stuff that like they hid from us when we were children. And I'm honestly like in awe of my parents.
So they made it, do you think they made it look easy? Do you think it
Oh yeah, they did.
So do you think that you were, I hate to say this word naive because I hate this word for some reason, but do you think you were naive a little bit when you opened the Footlight?
No.
Because of them?
No, definitely not. I knew what I was getting myself into.
And were they honest with you before that?
So 100%.
All the dirt all came out.
Oh, yeah. Because, once I started going down that path, my dad was extremely honest with me and my mom was honest with me. And, you know, they helped me with a lot of the business planning and the financial stuff. And, you know, it was, I wouldn't have been able to do this without my parents.
Right. So now it makes a lot more sense why you were able to open such a, it's a big venue, guys.
It did,
if you haven't been there.
It took us 3 years to actually open. There was like a year's worth of planning because I'm really OCD about planning. So like I probably rewrote my business plan like 7 times.
Do you have investors?
Yes.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. So like I'm the main owner and operating partner just because I do all the work and I don't get paid. And then we have like a slew of investors from all walks of life. You know, Victor Venato is an investor.
I did not know that.
And he still hosts the NYC Talent Show, which was at the Bowery. Now he hosts it at Footlight.
Right.
He's been a huge supporter. There's, you know, a lot of other investors from the neighborhood, people that I know. And it's been a collaborative effort.
I did not know
monetarily.
That. That's really interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I couldn't have done this on my own financially. I mean, I've been a bartender for 12 years and like, I never made enough money to like make that much savings. But, you know, when I wanted to do this, I started talking to a friend of mine who also is in business and marketing and such. And she was like, Laura, you can't wait until you have the money to do this because then you'll be waiting forever. You just need to find the right people.
Huh.
You need to have a business plan.
Wow.
You need to have a pitch and you need to get the right people. And inspired. Yeah. So I wrote a really solid business plan. I did a ton of research, a ton of market research. Talked to all my friends who are business owners, who are bar owners in the neighborhood. I was just like a constant like sponge of information about operating a business like this.
Now I can see like, but so from your, you know, where your background that, you know, it wasn't as like, to me, it's like, whoa, how the fuck does somebody do that? And I know it's like, not to take anything away because it's really like hard work and a lot of balls and all that. But there was some guidance.
Yeah.
Some trust there. So where did you go to college?
I went to Berklee College of Music.
Oh, yes. Were you interested in music all growing up then?
Oh, yeah. I was always in performance since I was like 7.
And what did you perform? Did you start playing music? Music your focus or?
I did a lot of theater when I was a kid. My mom's was also a theater teacher. Before she got into administrative work and working for the city, my mom did a lot of different jobs. But for the most part, she taught theater to kids after school programs. And she also was very active in her own community theater group. So that was
supposed to theater. Did you go to see a lot of theater?
Yeah, that's what the Footlight is named after. There is the oldest community theater organization in the country is called the Footlight Club. And it's based
out
of.
I did not know this.
Yeah,
we're learning here.
It's based out of Jamaica Plain. It's they operate out of this beautiful, amazing, antique like theater called Elliott Hall that's been preserved. It's a historical landmark in Boston. And it has like the wood slat iron seats and everything.
Wow.
So like my mom and I used to go there often. Like she had a lot of friends that would participate in performances there. So we would go see her friends.
So
perform.
So you were like a little kid on stage, but what about the music? Like, was that your main focus when you went to college?
Well, Yes, but I started focusing on music earlier than that because I started taking a lot of music lessons when I was like 11 to 14, and I still did theater all the way through that time, and I ended up applying to the Boston Arts Academy, which was a performing arts high school in Boston, and we were actually I was actually in the first graduating class.
Whoa.
Because it was a brand new school, so I got accepted for both theater and music.
Well, you're talented, so you had a lot of innate talent.
Yeah, I had to decide between music and theater, though, because they couldn't do a dual major at that time since it's a new school. I ended up choosing music just because I remember like being brought into the headmaster's office because they'd accidentally like enrolled me in both programs.
Wow.
And she was like, you're going to have to make a choice. Do you want to do music or do you want to do theater? And here I am, this 15-year-old kid sitting in her office. I'm just like, I guess I'll do music because I have less official experience in music. So I'd have more to learn in music. So I'm just going to go with music.
That's interesting because a lot of kids or a lot of people, see, that's such a good thing because a lot of people wind up going towards what they're comfortable doing or what they know they're good at. And that's not, that can work out well for you, but there's not necessarily going to be a lot of growth in there.
Right.
So are you glad? Do you feel like you made the right decision?
Oh, it's crazy to think how that one decision dictated an entire life path for me.
So what kind of music, like what became your focus as far as music goes?
I started getting really into songwriting young. I started writing songs when I was like 16 or 17. They weren't good, but I just needed expression. Like I did have, you know, my childhood was great, but my adolescence was troubling.
Really? How come?
I had a lot of mental illness problems.
You had mental illness?
Oh yeah. I'm like bipolar. What kind?
Are you really?
I am.
So what side are you on right now? You seem very happy.
I'm bipolar too. So there's a little bit less
bipolar
peaks and waves.
Two?
Yeah.
Oh, that's, I didn't know there was like a subset.
Oh yeah. There's two. That one is like, you know, crazy, not sleeping, spending all your money.
Yeah.
Two is more just like,
I didn't know that.
Getting like hypomanic and being super productive and then like having a crash and having to sleep for 2 days.
Wow. So, so how did that come out? Like, did that bring a lot of instability or did?
Yeah.
What was your high school?
High school, it was crazy because like I entered high school and I was on this like crazy high because I'd always wanted to do what I was doing and I was finally had everything I ever wanted and I was so lucky. But I still felt bad or just like not great, you know, like I had like this, like I felt so,
Were you like an outstanding student or like outstanding?
Okay. I had straight A's and I had a full scholarship to college.
Fuck.
But like,
oh man, and good parents. Oh man, you have like the charm life. Your life is perfect.
Oh yeah, so
perfect. Jealous. No.
All right, being bipolar is not great.
So anyway, so everything was fine, and then when your hormones probably started acting up in high school, then you became
really imbalanced.
So you're obviously a driven person.
Yeah,
and you were driven in high school.
And that's how I dealt with the emotional instability.
Did so well.
Yeah.
So you were doing really well, but then you were really depressed and you didn't know why.
Yeah.
And is there any depression in your family?
Well, bipolar is hereditary.
Yeah, that's
what
I thought.
That's been speculative. I'm not.
But I mean, do you see that in your parents or anything like
that?
Not
in my parents, but in other members of my family.
Okay. So you were bipolar and how did it come out? How did it get diagnosed or how did it?
It took a long time. I've dealt with my emotional instability in very unhealthy ways. And I tried to get
drugs and alcohol, sex,
eating disorder.
Eating disorder.
Eating
right.
disorder and hyper proactivity in school. And
were you a perfectionist?
Not sleep, of course. Yeah. And I would like never sleep. I would work all the time. I had two jobs in my junior year. It was just like distract, deflect, deflect. That's like how I dealt with
anything.
And how
did your parents, like, were they just like, we're so proud of our daughter, such an overachiever?
My poor parents, like
talented and
honestly,
high
like, I was a mess and I was not extremely open with them. And, you know, I don't think that they knew how bad things were for me.
Was it more that you were just unhappy and you weren't talking about it, or
because
were
I
you
felt
acting?
Bad. Yeah, yeah. I was
or
unhappy
were you
and
acting
I felt bad
out?
About it.
Were you acting out and being doing like things?
No,
lying,
I didn't really act out.
So you were kind of a good kid, just not happy.
Yeah, I was really unhappy.
So no one noticed because you were like, you're great.
Yeah, and I didn't want them to notice either.
Right.
So like,
you're a perfectionist.
I was
part
protecting
of the
them.
Oh, yeah.
I always wanted to
smart.
Protect my parents.
Why do you think that is? You
well, the same reason why they didn't want us to know about our financial worries.
So do you think
that we protect each other?
Do you think that, that's interesting because do you think, I mean, I think it makes perfect sense that you would have that in your nature to be like a business owner because you have all these people working for you and you kind of need to protect them, right?
Yeah.
So do you feel like, Do you enjoy protecting people or is it something you're natural at? Or?
I think it's definitely inherent quality.
Uh-huh.
I also I think a lot of that had to do with my relationship with my brother growing up too, because mm-hmm. we're 5 years apart and mm-hmm. I remember the first time holding him. Like I have this memory. It's one of my earliest memories of them handing me this baby on the couch for the first time and holding him and just like looking at this little tiny baby and just thinking to myself, like, I am going to protect him with my life. I just remember thinking, like, he's so small and he's so cute and squishy. I just want to hold him forever.
Wow.
You know, I loved him so much immediately upon holding him. And
wow.
like, and that sort of carried through. Like, I always looked out for him. I always wanted to protect him, you know, till now. And now he's a corrections officer.
Yeah, you did a good
totally
job.
Protect
now
he
needs
himself.
To protect. But that's interesting because what he does is very protection oriented as well,
yeah.
no?
Well, we come from a law enforcement background family. Like both my grandfathers were on the police department at one point. My mom's father was actually superintendent of police in the 70s.
Holy fucking shit.
Yeah. So we come from a law enforcement background.
So protection is like sort of part of your...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Part of family crest.
Let's look at how that works out in your relationship. Can we ask you that?
Yeah.
Let's ask you that. Tim is very, very active in Tim Che, who's awesome.
Yeah.
We have to get him on here. We have to get you guys on together sometime.
Oh man, that would be
maybe
a blast.
Right before you get married.
Oh
or
man, that would
next
be great.
Couple months. That would be awesome. So Tim is, I mean, if you've been to the Footlight, you've met Tim as well. And he's great. We love Tim. We know that. I do not know Tim very well either. And so tell me, how did you guys meet? How long have you been together? Give me a little bit of intake on that.
Oh, well, we met at the Bowery Poetry Club, the NYC Talent Show, which again, now is at Footlight every Monday. And it's a fantastic show. I loved going to it. It's actually one of the first things I ever went to in New York and saw Tim perform. Probably the first time I was there. I mean, used to go there all the time and I saw him perform over the years and I always really admired him and I admired his energy and his performance was always funny yet passionate. And
what did he do?
Tim, he's done a lot of things over the years. Like he moved to New York, to do spoken word.
Mm-hmm. But what was the, like, explain the performance
at the time? Well, so
that
when,
you, that
when
you...
I met him, he was sort of going from through spoken word and sort of like a storytelling style into comedy. Mm-hmm. So like he was kind of like making that transition mm-hmm. in his work mm-hmm. And his performances are just so passionate. He would get up on stage and he literally just scream at us. And
that's cool.
And like with observations and sometimes funny, sometimes not, mm-hmm. you know, but like, I just, mm-hmm. I loved his passion
right.
and, you know,
so that's cool. You were like really turned on by his work.
Oh yeah.
His
I was
persona.
Like, I thought he was pretty special.
So you got a crush on him.
I had a huge crush on him.
And then what happened? Did you guys?
So it was like, we were sort of friends first. We would talk and stuff at the mic. We would hang out after at Mars Bar and stuff.
Oh man, Mars Bar.
And and then like just after a while, I started realizing that I had more of a crush on him than I thought I did. And then it's actually a disgustingly cute story. But like on Valentine's Day, I know, I can't believe it. I hate Valentine's Day.
Okay, me. You know, I used
hate
to have this T-shirt. I made these T-shirts and sold them. I had a long single life, folks, and I used to make T-shirts and sell them. It said, "Valentine's Day is just a society's way of saying fuck you to people like me." So don't
Yeah.
Don't feel bad about it.
No, but
look at you now and look at you now.
I know. So this was what was happening on that particular Valentine's Day. I was single and I was a roaming kissing booth girl for Skits and Tits.
Oh,
because they
cool.
were having Skits and Tits, Diane and Tanya. Jessica Delfino and Tanya. They were doing a Skits and Tits Valentine's Day edition. And I was one of their roaming kissing booth girls. So I was
cool.
accepting dollars for kisses for charity.
Uh-huh.
And so
were
like,
those
you know,
tongue kisses?
No, they
All
were
right.
just, there
okay.
was, it was,
I
was sweet.
Just
it was more
nice.
Like a sweet, innocent
Very
charity
sweet.
Thing.
Very sweet.
You know, but I was dressed up in like spangly booty shorts and like crop
Did
top.
Anybody, so people could just grab you.
No,
no grabbing.
No grabbing.
Jesus.
No, this is like, you know, this is a feminist show.
You're calling it. All right. Okay.
No, I had complete control over what I wanted.
So
to
you were dressed up
of my
collecting
body.
Money for
yes.
like.
And so Tim was the last person to give me a dollar, and he gave and I gave him a kiss, and it was just like, whoa, I really like him.
And what happened after that? Did you give him the money back? Did you pay him?
No. Then like a couple, but probably like a couple months later, we like hung out one night after open mic and just like went home and like. Had our time.
So it was just like mutual? No one?
Yeah,
no. One, no
it was
one...
really gradual and it was really mutual. Both of us really
nice.
Liked each other. He had started coming to my shows too and he like would draw me little pictures. And like,
so he did, yeah. did. Have you guys talked about it? Did he have a little bit of a crush on you?
Oh, I know he had a crush on me.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, wow. It rarely happens. That sounds so healthy.
Yeah,
Jeez.
It was very gradual.
Right.
But now that was 6 years ago. So
oh, 6 years ago.
We've been together for 6 years.
Nice. Can I ask you how old you are?
I'm 34.
Oh, nice. And is Tim like the same age?
He's 33.
That's like
we're
the
like,
same
we're
age.
Like a year and a half apart.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a nice, that's such a fucking, you know, you know what's weird? I can't believe how fucking normal you are for how much craziness you are involved in. You are the normal person behind craziness. But I want to do a station ID. Don't you think that will be fun if we
yeah.
talk about how great Radio Free Brooklyn is and how
idea.
People can donate money if they go to the RadioFreeBrooklyn.com page?
That's a good idea.
And remind them that they're listening to Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit, and I'm talking with Laura Regan, the owner of the Footlight, which we are hearing about. And you know why we're here? I also want to give, because you've been talking about the New York City talent show that mm-hmm. Victor Varnado, he hosts often, him and Tim.
Yeah, him and Tim.
Right? And I want to use this as a chance to let people know. Colby's listening to this, by the way. Colby Smith, are you torturing? Colby Smith, my partner, my co-host on this, is doing journalism, teaching journalism to children. If you call 8 to 10 children this summer. And he's probably doing that right now. Are you torturing those kids? Are you teaching them how to hold a pen? Is that what learning journalism is at that age? Anyway, we're doing this really great showcase with comedy, pornography, art, and music. Me, as you know, Laura, but I want to tell all my fans listening mm-hmm. that we're doing this really cool showcase, Colby and myself, who's another host here, on Radio Free Brooklyn. He hosts Young Persons Radio at 10 o'clock Sunday mornings. And we're going to be grilling people about the sessions that they had on with me. And then they're going to do their act. It's going to be really awesome. But it's right before the New York City talent show. So we're tying these shows together, folks. So if you come there at like 7, you can have like a great time all night. We will inspire you. And then you can do the open mic after. At the New York City, right? Don't you
that
think it's kind of like a fucking amazing
idea.
Evening?
That's going to be
it's
such
be a great
evening.
Evening. So we're really looking forward to that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, back to you.
Mm-hmm.
Back to you and Tim. So you guys are married, and you guys aren't married.
Right.
So you're getting married in 2 months. You've been together 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so do you protect him? That's what I want to know.
I think so.
Really?
Are you a bit of his protector? I try to. I think he is...
How does
way
that,
more independent than...
So how does the protection part play out in your relationship, you think?
I think for me, like Tim is definitely a very impulsive person, which is something that I love about him.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he's very much... I think something I love about Tim is that he is all about just experiencing things and experiencing life.
Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes I get a little overprotective when, you know, I know like he has to work a double the next day and I get freaked out about him staying out too late and like not getting rest. And like, I worry more about his physical well-being than anything else, because that's really the only thing I have to worry about
him. Does he push himself a lot?
I think, yeah. Physically? Physically, yes. I mean, he's been a bike delivery guy for a few years now. And like, it's just, it's a challenging job. It's really physically demanding. And I just worry sometimes that like he's going to burn out or get hurt. He's been hurt a few times.
That is a little scary.
Yeah, it is.
But don't you think, you know, I can see a connection between that and being a policeman. Can you? Because like if I was married to either one, I'd be like, oh my God, he's going to go out and get hurt as a policeman, or always going to go out and get hurt. I don't know. Those things are I'm not using the word challenging. Those things would fucking freak me out.
Yeah, it's challenging. It is. It's challenging to love someone who is in danger a lot of the time. you know.
And did you ever think about having like, I mean, so, you know, so here's what this is what I'm thinking. So you've been a bartender most of your life, bartender, musician, what would we say?
Yeah.
Did you play out a lot? Were you playing? I mean, what was your career goal? Or was there a career goal?
I think there was a career goal at one point, but I think that has a lot to do with Berkeley too. Cause like I went to Berkeley, I got a full scholarship to go to Berkeley. It's the only school I applied to because I knew they were going to give me a scholarship because I had basically gone to school year round for 3 years doing every single after school summer program they had. I had no teenage fun. I worked constantly.
Well, at least you got something out of being depressed.
I just focused on the future, and everything was about the future. And I always used to think to myself, I wish I could fast forward to the future and see what it would be like. And so like everything that I did as a teenager was just to prepare myself for exploits. But what's crazy is that like I never really had a picture in my head as to what that was going to be. And not to get too dark, but like when I was a teenager and when I was really struggling with this undiagnosed bipolar disorder, I had a constant thought in my head that I just wasn't going to live out the year. I just always thought I was going to kill myself.
Really? You were really depressed?
Yeah. It wasn't even depression. Like, it wasn't even about depression. It was just about, like, you know, just wanting to give up. Feeling like no matter what I did, I'll never feel happy. Like that was the kind of...
Hopeless. Yeah. Right.
And like, because it's one thing that happens with bipolar too is you have like, I think it's called dysthymia. It's like...
Yeah, right.
It's
chronic,
when you're like just under happy.
Yeah.
And it's like you're so close, but like so far away.
So are you on medication now?
Now I'm not. I was medicated for like 7 years. And then I stopped taking my medication. I moved to New York because I lost my health insurance. Honestly, it's been the best choice I've made. Every single body, every single brain is different. So I'm not going to advocate that other people who may have this mental illness not take their medicine. Mm-hmm. I think that my brain in particular, as long as I have balance in my life, as long as I'm sleeping normally, eating normally, you know, exercising a bit, like keeping a routine and a schedule, I don't need medication. But that's not to say that I'll never go back on it again though either. So like, you know, you never know.
Were you in therapy?
I was in therapy. I started therapy when I was 16 because my eating disorder had gotten really bad.
So is that how people started noticing that you had emotional problems?
Yeah.
Because you were a perfectionist, so you had anorexia.
Yeah.
Were you hospitalized?
Not for anorexia. I was...
For something else?
Well, I was in therapy for a few years and I tried to kill myself a couple times.
Oh, man.
And then when they had me on all this medication that was not right for me, I had a really bad psychiatrist. I had a really great psychologist and I had a terrible psychiatrist who was treating me for the wrong disorder. She was treating me for schizophrenia, which is actually really common in women who have bipolar disorder because... some of the symptoms that are exhibited in especially adolescent bipolar can mirror schizophrenia symptoms. So she was seeing me 20 minutes a month. She would see me one time a month.
Terrible.
And she was prescribing drugs for me that were completely wrong. So by the time I was in my first year of college, I couldn't remember anything. I had terrible short-term memory. I would fall asleep in class. And it just got so bad that like I was going to give up again and I wanted to kill myself again. And I actually like was on a bridge over a highway, just going to jump into the cars and like, end my life. And right as I was about to climb up on the thing, I had like this flash of like my brother.
Ah.
And I thought to myself, like, he will never forgive me for this.
Ah.
I can't. Good. I can't do it.
Yay.
So like I went straight to my psychiatrist who I'd had an appointment with that day. And I was going to kill myself before it because fuck her.
Yeah. You know, I've got a real big problem with them. I have a lot of really bad psychiatrist stories.
Yeah.
I mean, I do. I'm not going to.
I'm a huge advocate for psychology. Like, I think, you know, talk therapy, CBT therapy are really great tools.
Yes. Yes. But I mean, the reason I'm so cynical about psychotherapy is because as a practice, it doesn't have enough regulation and there are a lot of really bad shrinks. Great shrinks. It's a great technique. It's a great method. There's a lot of great things that can be done. But unfortunately, there's a lot of bad shrinks. And I think, you know, we can't just treat them. And, you know, we give them too much power.
I totally agree.
So anyway.
Yeah.
But you've had a range of experiences.
Yeah.
So
that's when I was hospitalized at that
point. So did your parents freak out? Or like,
oh, my God.
So that's when you were hospitalized because the psychiatrist said that Laura was going to kill herself.
I went to the psychiatrist and said, I want to be institutionalized. This medicine is wrong. I don't feel right.
Smart.
I want better treatment. I basically went in there. Wow. I was like, I don't feel safe in my body. I don't feel safe in my mind. Like, I need to change something.
Mm-hmm.
And my psychiatrist, you know what she said to me? She said, you know, Laura, it's not a vacation. It's like
that makes me want to punch.
I know.
Punch.
And
her.
I was like, you know what? This is just like even more reason for me to go in because then I don't have to see you anymore.
But you knew she was fucked up. You knew it was.
So
her.
When, as soon as I got into the intake at the psych hospital, I told them what she said and I told them what she had done to me, and they were very sympathetic. And even though it was so scary to be institutionalized, it was one of the best decisions I ever made because they were then able to properly diagnose me, wean me off the bad medicine that I was on and get me on a cocktail that would help me achieve the balance that I have now.
Mm-hmm.
So
is that life altering then?
Absolutely.
And I also want to point out that my impression, that suicide is almost often a compulsion, I think.
Absolutely.
Do you feel like that? Like, people think that it's like a thought out process or something, but
no.
I don't think it really is. I think it's just kind of a compulsion and
very rarely is it thought out.
Yeah. And that people can't help themselves almost.
No.
Right.
Because it's like a nagging thought in the back of your head that is just there and you can't quiet it.
Yeah.
And it's really difficult. You just start imagining yourself in every situation you're in. You're standing on the train platform and you can see yourself falling in front of the train. You're like, you're at your house and you can see yourself just slitting your wrist with your knives. Like, it's just like everywhere you are, there's a way to kill yourself.
And that's what being
suicidal feels like.
And I think that's very misunderstood. Do you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's kind of a shame because I think more people would get help if that was. I mean, I'm glad. Thank you for talking about it. I'm glad we're having this chat because I think people need to be aware of that.
Yeah. Suicide awareness is extremely unnoticed and it needs to be more present.
But I also think that people think it's a very conscious choice and it's not really quite a conscious
and
choice.
And I hate that people shame people for feeling suicidal and call them selfish. And like, I mean, yes, it is a selfish act, but like, imagine being in their shoes for like 5 minutes and what that must feel like.
So much fucking shame in the society over the most bullshit crap. So I mean, don't even.
My mantra lately has been have compassion for your process.
There's no shame in shame. That's what I say. So how do your parents respond when they, so what happened? They get a call from you?
My poor parents.
Did they get a call from you or from the hospital?
Probably my doctor. I think, I don't actually don't really
remember.
Did they
just show up and there you were
strapped down, straight jacket, were you? No, I wasn't, never in a straight jacket, but I was on suicide watch.
Were you restrained?
A lot, yeah.
Yeah. I saw my dad restrained once. It's not pretty.
No.
It's weird.
It's really
degrading. Did you feel
degrading.
Weird being restrained? Were you like...
I feel like it was unnecessary. I mean, how can I really...
Like, was that like a freaky thing? Was it like, oh my God, I'm restrained? Or yeah. Were you out of it? Or
No, I was pretty present most of the times that I've been restrained.
But you were a kid. You were young too, so you probably didn't feel... I mean, it's horrible, but you probably didn't feel... You felt like... The adults were doing everything anyway, right?
Honestly, like, because that was not the first time that I'd been admitted for an overdose when I was 17.
Overdose of?
I took a box of diet pills and a fistful of Advil and hoped to die.
Mm.
And I do not recommend going that route because it felt like my heart was going to explode. I mean,
sounds horrible. You
should
have thrown up. Did you throw up?
Eventually,
that's not funny.
While being restrained. So,
oh my God.
And they had left me in a room by myself, restrained, strapped down, and I just started to throw up and nobody came to help me.
That's torture.
It was
so
cool.
How did that happen?
That was the first serious suicide attempt that mm-hmm. I'd ever had.
Where did you get the diet pills? Were they over the counter?
Yeah, I bought them.
Yeah, over like
I had
over
been
the
I had been
type.
Taking them like because I had an eating disorder.
Right, but they were like over the counter.
Yeah,
type.
They okay. But they were the. They, I don't think they make them anymore. They were the kind with
yeah,
like, all
I
the
had
bad
them
drugs
once
in
too.
Them.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, if I even smell them now, I want to throw up.
Good. So anyway, so you were taking, so you had legal drugs that you overdosed on.
Yeah.
Okay. Or legal, whatever. So, were you passed out or how did you get to the hospital?
I basically got buyer's remorse. I started to shake all over and I went straight to my psychologist's office and didn't have an appointment. She came out and saw me and was like, okay, we're going to the ER. Good. I don't know what you took, but mm-hmm. you're in for a night. mm-hmm. So, and that was also a very terrible experience too, because the ER doctor was super rude and horrible to me and basically called me a selfish, spoiled brat that I should be grateful for what I have and all this stuff. And I was like,
nice.
You have literally no idea what my situation is. Like, I don't even know what my situation is. I don't know why I feel this way. I don't want to feel this way. That's why I tried to kill myself.
I don't like that guy either.
No, I had some pretty bad doctor experiences.
So did your parents show up then?
Yeah, my mom was devastated. Mm-hmm. And my mom and I had a pretty strained relationship during my adolescence, just because I think she didn't know what to do with me. She didn't know why I was sad. She didn't understand it. And you know, and she knew something was going on, but I wasn't being honest with her and I wasn't talking to her. And a lot of that had to do with like my mom's own, you know, kind of wall that she had put up after her father passed away when I was 14, you know, and it just like a lot of things happened to like create this sort of dynamic.
So you didn't feel like you could talk to her. Do you think, and why was that? Were you protective of her or were
you? Yeah, I think it was more so because it was a combination of wanting to protect her from the truth and feeling ashamed of how ungrateful I was. I mm-hmm. thought of it as me being ungrateful mm-hmm. and selfish.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I beat myself up so much mm-hmm. about it. And I just felt like, you know, my mom didn't deserve that.
Have you talked to her about that directly since that time?
Yeah, we've had a lot of really
Joseph,
open...
are you listening to this? This is fucking heavy shit. I'm sorry. Are you crying now?
My dad probably would
what
be
about
crying.
Your mom?
She's
she
at
listening?
Work.
Good. Okay.
Yeah. But no, I will.
She's fine. Laura's doing great. She's
I am.
A star. Come
but
on.
It's because of them.
It's
you
because
know?
Of you,
it's...
Joseph. Okay. And what's your mom's name?
Mary.
And Mary. Joseph and Mary. Oh, Jesus.
And my brother's name is Jay.
Jay?
Little Jay, you know, like the
Jay.
The Holy Family.
Jay, you saved your sister's life. So anyway, so you felt like you didn't want to, you were protective of your mother, this protection thing.
Yeah.
So you felt like you couldn't talk to her, though. If you felt that you could talk to her, do you think that would have made a lot of things easier? Like, because was that like, do you think that maybe your shame or whatever brought you to being, what's the word, brought on the eating disorder? Because that's a good way to like have control and use addiction and,
right.
and perfection.
I honestly don't think too much about what my parents could have done or should have done.
No, I'm saying like I'm just trying to figure out
right.
the dynamic.
I honestly, I don't I don't think that anything should have happened differently.
Because, no, I don't think so either. Yeah.
I learned everything about who I am and what my limitations are from having this struggle in my life. And like, mm-hmm. I honestly like can't even think about it going a different way. I mean, yes, sure. Like if we had were able to talk more or be more open at that time.
No, I'm just
curious. It could have made a difference.
No, I'm not. First of all, you know, you're obviously remarkable in a lot of ways. I'm sorry that you went through something so painful and difficult, but.
It seems like a lifetime ago now.
It's a lifetime ago. And, you know, you're in an amazing place now, right? You're getting married. I imagine you're pretty happy right now.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited. I think in this chapter of my life, I feel like, you know, I feel really lucky. You know, I obviously earned it. You know, I earned being
and
where
you,
I'm
and
at.
You know that.
And I worked really hard to mm-hmm. be where I am.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really happy and I feel really content about where I'm in the world. Mm-hmm. And
it sounds like also one thing I want to point out that I think is very, very impressive is the way that the relationship with your husband evolved, because mm-hmm. it feels really natural and very like positive and very sort of like normal, like in the best sense, in normal and unusually normal in the best sense of the word. Does that make sense to you?
No, it totally does. I mean, we went through stuff, you know, like we had challenges that we faced together and, you know, we lost people in our lives and went through that, mm-hmm. That sadness together, that grief together. And, you know, it was like these, it was like going and like, of course I would never have been able to get through the opening of the Footlight without Tim, without being able to go home to Tim and just like
your
vent and cry. Like we're a team.
Yeah.
And I think like it took us, you know, these 6 years to sort of get to that point where we realized that we're a team and that we, you know, make each other better and stronger. And mm-hmm. I think that that's mm-hmm. when we came to the conclusion that we would want to get married.
Well,
'cause we didn't really want to.
Oh, really?
We hadn't really thought too much about it. And, you know, we both said like maybe in the future, like, yeah, sure, we'll get married. But then last September, just like off the cuff, Tim was like, I think we should just get married. I think we should just do it now. And I was like, it took me about 20 times to think that he was serious.
Oh, really?
It wasn't until he was crying and he said, dead ass on my grandmother's grave, I want to marry you. And that's how I knew he was serious.
Aww, you just gave me the chills. That's so sweet. Aww.
And it was like at a bar. It was at our friend's bar. It's Milo's Yard, which is down the street from Footlight, which we all go to after Footlight closes because they're open till 4. And so we were having like a celebratory drink. I think it was like the first talent show. And we were all excited and having a great night. And he was like, you know what? Like, I can't imagine my life any different like without you in it, and so I think we should just get married. And then we slept on it, we thought about it, and then kind of went over what we wanted out of a marriage or a wedding. Mm-hmm. And then once we were on the same page with everything, which actually within like a half an hour of talking we knew exactly what we wanted to do and how we wanted to do it. Then we called our parents.
Aww,
it was actually my dad was actually the first parent we could get in touch with.
Oh, nice.
And
Joseph.
He was at work and we called and my dad said, I said, Dad, Tim asked me to marry him. And he goes, what? He's like, he didn't ask for my permission first. Strike one.
Oh, I bet they're thrilled, aren't they?
They're pretty happy. My parents really loved him. So
seems like the sweetest
guy. His parents are great too.
Oh, that's so
nice. He has a really great family. He has a sister and like, yeah, we are all going to get along really great. So it's pretty exciting. I'm super psyched for our wedding.
So, you know, I love hearing about, you know, your relationship because you don't hear enough of, you know, just people meeting and being open to what it takes to having a nice, just the instincts that I think you guys demonstrated to me, as far as I can see, in, you know, just like, I like this person, and saying to your, just being open about to yourself and to the other person, I like this person. It's really simple. I mean, I'm not good at it myself, but it really sounds that way, right?
Yeah.
Right?
And, well, it was definitely like, it was a very gradual progression of, I like this person. And then it very quickly moved into, I want this person to be part of my life. Mm-hmm. And then like that built up, and then it was like, this person is now my partner. You know, it was like step by step. But I realized I loved him by how I wanted to include him in my life.
But it happened through the experience of the person. It didn't happen mm-hmm. because I want this or my life looks like this.
Right.
And it sounds like you've lived your life pretty much that way. And I know it hasn't been easy, but that's also what's made you so tough.
Right.
And, you know, smart and able to relate to people, all the crazy people that you deal with in your day-to-day life, which I can only imagine running a venue like the Footlight. So anyway, I want to make sure that we get in at least one song, and I wanted to get more. We're going to have you back. You and Tim, we're going to have you back together, and we'll have some music.
That'd be fun.
But I also just want to remind people that they're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn and to come to the show that Colby... Listen to Colby's show. Colby's show is really great because it has so many crazy call-in. It's wild. It's wild. Like, Colby's not wild. That's why the show is wild. at least the Colby that he shows the public. I don't want to comment on Colby as a person fully. But anyway, so you guys should come to this. It's going to be Monday, July 31st at 7 p.m. at the Footlight, 465 Seneca Avenue in Ridgewood. It's going to be on my Facebook page, and it's going to be really, really fun. We're going to have this crazy pornographer who's been on my show, Porno Jim. He used to have a show on the radio, and he's going to show like really weird pornography, like not just dirty, but just really like somebody with a woman with a strap on fucking a watermelon.
Oh my
things
God.
Like that. So I am going to, Laura, you are inspiration. I knew you were, but like now I knew you were intellectually, but now I feel it. So I'm like just so grateful to have you on today and get to spend some time with
you
and share
having me.
And share the joy that is you with our listeners. And now we're going to get to one song. I'll post the rest on my Facebook page as well. But tell us a little bit about what song this is. Or
which one?
We're going to play Shelf Life.
Oh, Shelf Life. It's from Bridget and the Squares. This is my band for 7 years. And we still play sometimes, but not very often. But this was one of my favorite songs I ever wrote.
Okay, folks, here you go. I think. Let's see. I don't know. Maybe not. We are looking for buttons. Okay. I think we found one.
I'm not as cute on the inside, so keep dressing me up like a doll, or I am bound to disappoint you.
I don't want you to see.
I don't want you to see.
I don't want you to see.
We're